as we are. All right, so if you're joining us tonight, or just kind of a reminder of where we are, what we're doing, we're looking at coming events. This isn't specifically doing the book of Revelation, going through that. There have been a number of those instances in which that has already occurred. Ladies Bible Study did that on Tuesday nights and went through, and some of you were part of that. Pastor Doug did a section on that, a Sunday school class on that some few years ago, I guess it was. And so what we're doing tonight is not specifically working through the book of Revelation, but we are looking at events that are coming chronologically, okay? Thanks. If I didn't get enough and we need more, let me know. So we're looking at coming events, things that are coming chronologically. What we have done thus far, we have looked at the fact that the next thing, if we're looking at, this is kind of that drawing, we are in this church, what is referred to as the church age. I like that terminology better than the age of grace, because all of it is grace. Even Old Testament is grace. People came to know Christ, became followers of God through grace. They were looking forward to the cross. Abraham believed God and it was counted unto him as righteousness. I don't know. We aren't really specifically told what all God told Abraham, but whatever God told Abraham, Abraham said, I believe, picked up out of the land of Ur of the Chaldees, as it is called, packed up and started heading toward what is called Promised Land, Palestine, that particular area. God called him out of a pagan culture. I mean, there was no other witness. He didn't have the Bible, but God appeared to him, revealed to him truth. And so Abraham believed. So, and it's by grace. So Old Testament is by grace. Old Testament was never designed that if you keep the Ten Commandments, you get into heaven. In fact, Galatians tells us that Old Testament, the Ten Commandments, just show us that we can't do it. It's kind of like looking in a mirror. And when you look in a mirror, you see where we fall short. Those of us fall short. And so that there's something that needs to happen. And so we see that reflected. And so The Ten Commandments was really designed to be a mirror. I mean, Jesus summed it up into two, didn't he? What was he took the ten and he put it into two. What was the first one that he mentioned?
Love the Lord with all your might.
Yeah, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, strength. Love the Lord with all your might.
Love your name.
All of us strike out on number one. So if somebody's going to say, I'm going to get into heaven keeping the Ten Commandments, you're going to strike out on that. What was the second one?
Love your neighbors
yourself. So the first four commandments are synthesized in loving God with all of your heart. That's where the first four did. Don't focus. No idols, no those kinds of things. And then from 5 on through 10, you have to have the vertical right before you can get the horizontal right. Okay, so our relationship with God has to be first, and then we have a relationship with people. And I don't know about you, but I strike out on that too. I don't always put my neighbor first. And neighbor isn't just a guy living next door to me. Jesus told that story, but we're not going to go down that road. So the idea being that it's all grace. We are now living in church age. It is not Old Testament economy. That when did the church age begin?
After Jesus.
Pentecost, right? 50 days after the resurrection of Jesus. We're past 50 days after Passover. That's what the purple line. The purple line is to illustrate the coming and going of Jesus. So the purple line down is the incarnation when Jesus came to earth. Cross, burial, resurrection, and then ascension back into heaven. All right? And then 50 days after Passover, the church began. We read about that in the first couple chapters of Acts. Beginning of the church age. So Old Testament Israel is put on hold. And then the next event that is coming for us is what?
Rapture.
All right? And I didn't draw it in here, and that's my bad, so you can adjust your diagrams that you have, where Jesus does not actually set foot on planet Earth, but he comes, and those who are dead in Christ, this is 1 Thessalonians 4, go to meet Jesus. And then those who are alive go to meet Jesus in a split second. And so it isn't really, even though in some of the prophecies, both the rapture and the second coming of Christ are put together. All right, they're kind of just referred to as the second coming. But then we get more evident, more explanation in the New Testament of the fact that actually there are two different events. There's a rapture of the church, where the church goes to be back with Jesus, and then it begins the tribulation period, which is the 7 years. There you go, 7 years. That is focused on Israel, and that's the top line. These are the green line. It's Daniel's 70 weeks that are referred to that we read in the book of Daniel, obviously. And so we are told that there was 7 weeks and then 62, which puts us at 69. But we're still missing 1 week, one segment of sevens. And where does that happen? It's the tribulation period. Okay? So we have looked thus far, we have talked about the fact that the next thing on the agenda is the rapture of the church. And it's only for those who are followers of Jesus. It's those who are part of the church. And so that's the next thing on the agenda. And while tribulation is happening down here and the church has been raptured to be in heaven, what's going on with the church in heaven? This was our second week that we were together. Bema seat of Christ. Works are being evaluated. And so that takes place, and we talked about that, the different events that are taking place. By the way, there, other than, I think, 1 week missing, we do have audio of this, and there's a link to it. Pastor Doug has it. And the week that we're missing is my fault, because I forgot to start the recorder. So if you missed the first, you want to go back, there's some opportunities there. And actually, this is also, I think, on that link in color. So if you want to go that route. The third week that we were together, and this is what Pastor Doug taught, was that the church is not Israel. There's a separation between the church and Israel. They are two different things, which is really important to understand all of this. Okay? So Pastor Doug went into that. He's got his worksheet up on that. The fourth week we're together, the imminency of Christ. Could Jesus come back today? And basically the answer is yes. That there's nothing standing in the way from the rapture taking place. There's no event that needs to happen. They've already happened. And so Jesus could really come back today. And so the imminency of Christ, imminent return could happen. She's right up here, Brad. Front row, man.
Don't tell him. I put my hair up in his disguise.
Well, it was working because he looked lost.
I know. He saw me already, believe it or not. We're in the same car.
He didn't have his glasses on.
That's exactly right. Now I do.
Now he does. And so the next thing on the agenda is, you know, Christ's return. Could it happen? And yes, it could happen. Last week we looked at together Daniel's 70 weeks prophecy. We spent more time in that. What I want to do this evening is to look at one of the main actors in the events that are going to take place during the tribulation period. This actor, and I don't mean he's pretending. I mean he's one of the main individuals, but he's referred to as the Antichrist. He is the Antichrist. That's a name that's used of him. So we want to spend some time there, and then next week, Lord willing, when we come back, we'll talk about the 144,000. So we're moving into the tribulation period. What are some of the events that are going to be taking place there? All right? So this evening, we want to focus on this individual who is known, and it is, I believe he's a person. There are certainly, 1 John, John writes in his epistle about the spirit of the Antichrist, that there are certain characteristics, certainly, that mark the Antichrist. And you know, the word anti means against. So Antichrist is against Christ and everything that Jesus stands for. But he's not just a system. He is a person. And we're going to spend some time looking at that together. He does have some superhuman abilities and powers. We'll look at that together tonight. And then he's also... We'll find him referenced in Revelation 13. So, he's against everything that Jesus stands for. And one of the spirit, by the way, the spirit of the Antichrist will tell us a lot of things. For example, the spirit of the Antichrist would tell us that humanity is not fallen. That we're all just really good people. We just need to be rejuvenated a little bit and all of that other kind of thing, which the Bible tells us we're all born in sin, every single one of us, and so we need the work of Jesus, okay? But Antichrist would say, no, you're fine. Maybe get a few things tweaked here and there, but humanity is just fine. The spirit of the Antichrist would tell us that we don't have a sin nature. That, again, it's just something that, you know, maybe it's your the way you were raised or your environment or some of those kinds of things is what our problem was. And if we just, and certainly environment can play a part, but ultimately it's in here. That's my biggest problem is not my environment, it's me. You know. And if you want a witness, you go talk to Pam. So anyway, and they would tell us, spirit of Antichrist would say humanity doesn't need redemption then. If there's no sin and none of those things, we don't need to be redeemed. Everything is just fine. And that we are capable, lastly, we are capable of our highest development. And some would even say almost deity itself, that we can almost become like little gods. So where we're going to move this evening is right into the tribulation period, looking at some of those events. And if you recall, when the tribulation occurs, every single human being who's part of the church, every single human being who's born again will leave planet Earth. Which means that every single religious teacher who is left behind is false. All right? And so we need to be aware of that. So this will be the worst person that the world has ever seen. He's going to introduce himself to Israel. He's going to offer hope, security to Israel. And so I invite you to grab a Bible, turn to Matthew chapter 24. And by the way, this individual, Antichrist, is part of God's plan. God is setting him up to arrive on the scene. It isn't that Antichrist somehow is able to go against God's plan and to thwart God's plan. It's the fact that he is part of God's plan and part of God's program. Antichrist is not as strong. Obviously, God is there's no one like him. He's all-powerful, all-knowing. And all of the omnis that we talk about, omniscient, omnipresent, omnipotent, etc. And Satan isn't. But Antichrist is going to be motivated and powered, in a sense, by Satan. So he's going to be a very powerful being. So let's pick it up in Matthew chapter 24. If any of you need a Bible, let me know. We've got a few Bibles over here. It's our text. If you need one, let me know. You can use your phone. You're more than welcome to do that. No problem. Just if you need one, I'll be happy to send one around, or two or three. So picking up in Matthew 24, let's start in verse 1. We've looked at this before, but we want to approach it from a little different perspective. So Jesus, this is verse 1 of Matthew chapter 24, and Jesus came out from the temple and was going away with his disciples, and they came to the point of the temple and the buildings, and he answered. And the disciples came and they're pointing out the temple. I mean, the temple was a beautiful building, and it's very possible that the sunshine was hitting it, and it was just a beautiful piece of architecture. And so the disciples, you know, are they're coming out and they see and they point out to Jesus, you know, isn't this something spectacular? Again, you don't find that particular statement within the text, but I think that's what motivates them to make the comment. And Jesus answered and said to them, Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down. So they're looking at this marvel, the temple, which is really the center of worship. It's the center of everything as far as the Jewish nation is concerned, the Israelite nation is concerned. And Jesus is saying, this thing's all going to be torn down. Now that can let the air out of, you know, your perspective in a hurry, can't. Beautiful building, yeah, it's going to be torn down. It's like, what? And then in verse 3, and as he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age? And then, you know, that takes us back to like verse 39 of 23, where Jesus, in essence, is spoken about coming again and doing some of those things and setting up his kingdom, etc. By the way, are you all warm in here?
Yes.
Okay, good. I mean, I'm not happy you're warm, but it gives me a good excuse to... Well, it's easier to put clothes on and take them off. let's see. Fan on. Okay, we're good. I just don't want you thinking it's hot air up here that's doing this stuff to you. Okay, so verse 3. Tell us, when will these things be? The disciples thought those things were going to happen at the same time. That the temple was going to be, you know, torn down, and Jesus was going to come at the same time. And that's not what Jesus is saying. They were not synonymous events. They were not simultaneous events. So, verse 4, and Jesus says, I'm going to give you some of the signs of his coming. And Jesus answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. Okay, so we can be misled. And here's how you can be misled. By the way, when we move into verse 4 and following, it's really referring to the first half of the tribulation. And then halfway through chapter 24, it emphasizes the last half of the tribulation. Okay? So the events that Jesus is talking about here, even though we might see things that are similar, it's not talking specifically about these particular events. So Jesus said, don't let anybody mislead you. Verse 5, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will mislead many. And that's, we've had that happen so much already, but it's going to be in a much greater degree under the tribulation period. So I'm Jesus, I'm Christ. You know, Heaven's Gate thing out in California years ago, Waco, Texas. I mean, you go down the list, and there have been a lot of those.
Has there been a lot all through the church age of...
Yeah. And verse 6, and you will be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. See that you're not frightened, for those things must take place, but that's not yet the end. So these things are going to happen, but this is in the first half of the 3.5 years. Tribulation, remember, there are a lot of events, seals, bowls, and trumpet judgments that come. So there are a lot of events that are going to happen, but this happens at the beginning of the 3.5 years of tribulation. For the nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and in various places there will be famine and earthquake. But all these things are merely the beginning of the birth pangs. Dear friends, I don't mean to pull the carpet out from under you, but this world is not going to get better and better. We need to face reality. It's going to become much more difficult. And so we need to be aware of that. We don't wring our hands. Jesus has told us that this is part of what happens. And in fact, when we pray the prayer, you know, the model prayer that Jesus gave us, thy kingdom come, we're praying for these events. So, but these are just the beginning of the birth pangs. Then they will deliver you to the tribulation, will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations on account of my name. Remember, Jesus is talking specifically about the Jewish people. Because this is dealing with tribulation, because those in the tribulation are Israel and not the church. Now, there will be persecution in the church. And there have been statements about that in other epistles. And at that time, many will fall away and will deliver up one another, and they'll hate one another. And in verse 11, and many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. There are individuals who are going to be duped by all of this. And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end shall be saved. What's he mean by that? I think here to the very end of the tribulation period. Okay, so we're getting a hint because right here we're going to switch to the last half of the tribulation. So 4 through 14 is 4 through 13 is dealing with first half of tribulation. The one who makes it all the way through here, and don't misunderstand, it's not saying you got saved by making it through the tribulation, But we just saw in the statement that's made here, there are many who are going to fall away. They're going to reject who Jesus is. Because people get saved in the tribulation period by believing who Jesus is. Same thing that they're saved during the church age, same thing that they're saved from Old Testament. It's all by grace through faith and trust in Jesus. We okay so far? All right.
What does it mean when he said that there will be earthquakes in diverse places?
In many places. There are going to be earthquakes all over. So, yeah, that's a good King James quotation, diverse places. But it's just, there are going to be a lot of earthquakes.
That means that people are going to be in despair, and they're going to be more likely to believe in something that's not really true?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to look for answers. And you know, as we work our way through this, we'll see even when it comes to the judgments and whatnot that are given. You know, we look at things that are taking place even today. I mean, there are earthquakes and whatnot, but they're not the end time events yet. But it's a reminder that some of these things are going to be there. And so, yeah, there's going to be. If you remember in the book of Revelation, when you read through the judgments that are coming, there are horrific things that occur in nature. God's behind it. But there'll be earthquakes, famine, and one of the interesting things you read there, and meteorites and asteroids and whatever are pummeling the earth, and then we read that there are those who, knowing that God is behind all of this, says that they go into the rocks and caves, hide themselves from God. So they know why the judgment is coming, they know why this is taking place, and they don't bow the knee to say, okay, you win, I get it, you got my attention. So, you know, dear friends, when somebody rejects Christ, it's not a matter of evidence. It's a heart issue. It's a heart issue. All right, so then beginning in verse 14, and the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a witness to all nations, and then the end shall come. All right, so then that moves us into verse 15, which is the last half of the tribulation period, and refers to, therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. When does that happen? Abomination of desolation. When does he stand in the holy place? Halfway through the tribulation period. Remember, he makes a treaty with Israel for 7 years that you're going to be protected. Today, our focus right now is in Ukraine, Europe, and that thing. But prior to that, and it will return back to that, will be the Middle East and Israel. That's where it ultimately ends up. Because this event is Jerusalem, the Holy Land, all of that becomes the center. So when you see the abomination of desolation, that is the Antichrist that we're going to jump back to Daniel in just a moment. When you see him standing in the holy place, pay attention. This is the sign. This is the big sign. And so then he goes on then, let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop go down to let the things out that are in the house. Don't go back home. Don't get out of Jerusalem. Get out of town. Because Antichrist has turned his anger on the people of Israel. And it goes on, you know, woe is the woman who's with childbirth because you don't move so fast. Don't go back home to pick up anything. Get out of as quickly as you can. Because Antichrist is now turning his attention on destroying Israel. Okay? So we're going to stop there in Matthew and invite you to turn back to Daniel. Okay? Daniel chapter 7. So if you have Psalms, go to your right. Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Lamentations, Ezekiel, big book, and then you hit Daniel. We're going to pick it up in, well, first three verses of chapter 7 speak about the fact that Daniel's having a vision. That God is revealing future events to Daniel. All right, so let's go into verse 4. And what God is revealing to Daniel is that there are kingdoms that are coming. If you remember last week, I don't know, that's pushing it. But last week, Daniel, when he was introduced to the 70 weeks, what year was it? Do you remember? It was B.C.
It was
538 B.C., okay? And he was reading previously the promise that Israel was going to be in captivity for 70 years. Daniel is in Babylon, which is captivity, so he's got it figured out. There are three more years to go here. But it's 538 B.C., which puts you right about there. Okay? So Daniel is writing under the Babylon. He's in Babylon. He's under the Babylonian captivity. It's the nation of Babylon. And you'll see 539 kind of ends Babylon's time. And there's a little bit of overlap, you understand. You know, by one nation kind of crashing, the next one taken up. And then the next one on the scene is Medo-Persia. So that's not yet happened when Daniel's writing. So he Daniel is given this vision. The first was like a lion and had wings of an eagle, and I kept looking until its wings were plucked and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. And so this lion, and you see it, if you look at some of the inscriptions from Babylon, lion was their mascot. We can use that terminology. All right? So Daniel's writing here, and he's being told, you're living in this time frame right here during Babylonian captivity. And then verse 5, and behold, another beast, the second one resembling a bear, and was raised up on one side. Three ribs were in its mouth with its teeth, and thus they said to it, arise and devour much meat. So now we have a second nation that's going to come. After Babylon comes Medo-Persia. You notice it says it's raised up on one side because that was a joint kind of rulership and one was stronger than the other. So Daniel's getting this prophecy that looking ahead, there's coming the Medo-Persian. And if you remember, there was the statue and you had the gold, silver, and you kind of worked your way down. Well, these are using animals to represent what was previously given. And after verse 6, and after this I kept looking, behold, another one like a leopard, which had on its back four wings of a bird. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given it. All right, so that takes us into Greek times. And who was the individual, and we're going to test your history. Who was the individual who, leopard is fast. Who was it that instituted, created, conquered under the Greek name? Do you remember? Alexander the Great. Okay? Fast moving. And at least from what we're told in history, that after he had gone within just about 3 or 4 years, he had conquered all the then known world. And he wept because there were no more worlds to conquer. But then he dies young. Do you remember what happened after that? His kingdom is divided among his four generals. Cassander, Lysimachus, Ptolemy, and Seleucid. So his four generals. Notice it says here, the beast also had four heads and dominion was given it. We're looking forward into the Greek city-states, etc. I find that pretty impressive. God predicts prophecy and he carries, and for us it's history. And it's one of the reasons why those who do not believe that God is able to give prophecy and that God is able to control the events would say, no, we think Daniel wrote late. Because we don't think God can do prophecy. We think he was writing history, looking back. And then verse 7, and after this I kept looking in the night visions, behold, a fourth beast, dreadful, terrifying, and extremely strong, had large iron teeth, it devoured and crushed, trampled down the remainder of its feet, and it was different from all the other beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Well, that takes us into the Roman Empire, But also there's a double fulfillment here. Because that is also what we're going to see in the tribulation period. Our 10 nations, and it was kind of interesting and fascinating. When if you remember European Common Market, you remember, I mean, this is like 20-some, 30-some, you can Google, I don't remember how many years ago. But when they hit 10, it's like, aha! Well, we've gone past that, and then Great Britain withdrew, you know, the Brexit came and all of that. It's like, okay, somebody needs to do something because we're a few short or something. We're not during this time frame here is in the tribulation period. Those are events that set us up for that. Am I making this clear so far? You kind of dilute you. Okay? All right. So, Roman Empire is what we're looking at with this other one, but it's also a prefigurement of what's to come. And we'll see that. It's extremely strong. Crushed, trampled down the remainder with its feet. Was different from all the other beasts there were before it. It had 10 horns. And while I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, little horn, came up among them. Three of the first horns were pulled by its roots before it. And behold, its horn was possessed. This horn possessed eyes like the eyes of man, and mouth uttering great boasts. That, I believe, and others also, is looking now forward to the tribulation, and that's a reference to Antichrist. So there, you will have ten kings, leaders, whatnot, and we're going to have one that comes up and destroys three others, but he's stronger. Okay, so this is a reference to what Jesus was saying. We'll see. Also, there's another place. Now, stopping in verse 9 and 10 is super important. Because we're hearing all these declarations of disaster. Verse 10. And I kept looking. And this is a reference to God the Father sitting on His throne. You know, when we're facing chaos and hardships and difficulties, it's really good to look to God the Father who is sitting on His throne. And so in all this earthly turmoil, we read this, until the thrones were set up, and ultimately, this is going to say, you know, when all of this is said and done, until the thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took His seat, God the Father, and His vesture was like snow, and the hair of His head was pure like wool, righteousness, holiness, all of those things. His throne was ablaze with flames. Its wheels were burning fire. The idea of wheels, that God's doing something. It's not like He's static. It's not like the deists would say that there's this God who kind of created the world and wound it up and then went off someplace to do His own thing and left it go on His own. The wheels have the idea in the time in which Daniel is writing that God is active. And He still is. The events that we see taking place in Europe between Russia and Ukraine and all those, I don't understand specifically how that all fits together. But God is active and He's sitting on His throne. He's not pacing back and forth in heaven saying, oh man, that's going to ruin my prophecies. Or I didn't see Putin would do that. Wheels were burning, verse 10. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before Him, thousands upon thousands were attending Him. Probably reference to angels. Good answer. And myriads upon myriads were standing before Him. Those are saints who know Christ. Again, this is big picture. It isn't that it's just got stuck in here. This is big picture. That those who've come to know Jesus are standing before the throne. The court sat and the books were opened. And so, which really references, I think, you know, toward the end of events when books are opened and we'll read about that. So this was given to Daniel, though it would be this is an overused word. Awesome experience to see the throne room of heaven. Yet that was designed to bring comfort and encouragement to Daniel. And it's designed to bring comfort and encouragement to you and me. You know, that this that we see as a tragedy, that, you know, Bonnie Lay and her family, I don't know what God's going to do through it. God doesn't do evil. He always does what is right. He's always righteous. And we don't understand at the time why some things happen the way they do. But God goes on record that He's omniscient. He knows everything. He's all powerful. So it isn't a matter that something was just too big for Him. And He's everywhere present at the same time. Omnipresent. So it isn't like He's around the other side of the world and forgot that we, you know, we existed and we had our issues. So that becomes an encouragement. Then we go into verse 11. And I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. Again, this is Antichrist in the tribulation period. Was speaking, I kept looking until the beast was slain and his body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but the extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. So ultimately, the beast, the lake, is going to be thrown into the lake of the fire, which happens out here. And all of those events, the lake of fire, which was prepared for the devil and his angels, and the Antichrist is going to be there, and Satan is going to be there, and all tragically, all those who have rejected Christ, who said no. Then in verses 13 and 14, again, I think is given as a means of encouragement. Whereas in verses 9 and 10, I think referred to God the Father. I think verses 13 and 14 refer to God the Son. And so we read this. And I kept looking in the night vision, behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a Son of Man was coming. That was one of Jesus' favorite terms to refer to Himself. One like the Son of Man, to emphasize that He lived down here on this earth as you and I live. He knows what it's like. One like the Son of Man was coming, He came up to the Ancient of Days. Okay, so God the Father and God the Son are different persons. So Jesus comes up to the Ancient of Days that we just talked about in verses 9 and 10. And was presented before Him, that Him was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, and all the people, nations, and men of every language might serve Him, and His dominion is an everlasting one, which will not pass away, for His kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. So that refers to the fact that Jesus gets this kingdom. And though it isn't here in Daniel, in the statue that Daniel has, remember again, the gold, that there was a stone that was cut out of the mountainside that came down and smashed the statue. Stone cut out without hands. That was Jesus coming down, smashing the worldly systems, and ultimately will set up His rule and reign. Now, temporarily, that will be the millennial period. And some have looked at this and said, that's a reference to this millennial period, 1,000-year rule and reign of Jesus at Jerusalem when Jesus comes back the second time and actually puts His feet on planet Earth. But it says it's an everlasting kingdom, and the millennium is not an everlasting kingdom. So I really think that refers to something out here, new heaven, new earth, that is going to be established. Okay? And then going on to verse 15. And as for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions in my mind kept alarming. Well, I guess so. You know, if you saw those things that were really animated, it would distress us as well. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning. He's probably asking an angel of what all of this means, the great beasts and the four in number and the four kings and all of those kinds of things. And then go on to verse 19. Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful, with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, trampled down the remainder with his feet, and the meaning of the 10 horns that were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which 3 of them fell, namely that the horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than his associates. Verse 21, and I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. Well, that, I think, is what happens here, especially in the middle of the tribulation period, when Antichrist goes after those who are true followers of Jesus. Also goes after persecuting, if you remember the woman that's referred to, this giving birth, also the nation of Israel. All right? So this beast is waging war. And verse 22, until the Ancient of Days and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. So we've got a lot of stuff compressed just in those two verses. It's not all exactly chronological, but it does tell us that Antichrist is going to persecute people here, those who are followers of Jesus, but ultimately he's going to be destroyed. Okay? So that's 24, 25.
So will the Antichrist be, will he come before the tribulation that we might know him if he comes before, the rapture?
You know, that's a really good question, Betty Jo. And there have been some differences. Will we know who he is? I don't know. There's been speculation over the years. FDR was considered that he was going to be the Antichrist. And they took his name and added numbers here and added them all up and subtracted a few there. And when you put that all together, you came up with 666. But you had to work some pretty miraculous stuff to end up with that. And he's dead and gone, so that doesn't fit. I say this facetiously. I think the one who had a really good shot at it, but he died in August this year, was Mikhail Gorbachev. Remember, because he had a birthmark up here, but he died August. So he's not going to fit the scheme. I don't know if we will see who it is. I kind of think probably, I mean, he could be alive now. Okay. But I don't know that we will know who it is.
You don't think it's the Pope?
No. I know that's been one that's thrown out there, the city on the seven hills and all that other kind of stuff. No, I don't. Because this is a political ruler and religious. I don't think he has the clout. And we'll see. I think we'll get there tonight. We'll see that it actually refers to the fact that he rejects the God of his fathers. Which leads, my stepfather believed then that he was going to be Jewish. Because this individual makes a treaty with the Jewish people. I mean, they've been under attack. We're going to be, the Palestinian PLO, all that. We're going to drive you in this. Israel is surrounded by enemies. We're going to drive you into the sea. We are going to eliminate you. And one of, perhaps, a good argument for the existence of God is the promise of God to Israel that they're going to survive. But, they've come up with this, we're going to, land for peace, right? You just give us more land, give us the West Bank, give us this, and we'll give you peace. No, they never will. Yasser Arafat, before he died, he said, we're going to eliminate Israel. So Israel is looking for someone who will grant them peace. I mean, they get rockets shot over there, every so often, and all of that. So somebody coming along and saying, I promise you peace. I can do it. I can deliver. And he will. For the first 3.5 years. Then he breaks his treaty. And so again, my stepdad, is a Jewish nation going to trust anybody other? And I'm not saying it. I could probably go either way at this point, whether or not. But it's going to be somebody that the Jewish nation would trust to grant them peace. I think a classic illustration of that. We want peace and security, right? You remember after 9/11 here, what all happened? TSA. Sorry, some of you work for TSA. I'm not bashing them. I just find it really interesting that we were willing to give up privacy for security. You went past scanners that took your clothes off. You may not have known that, or maybe you do. But the X-ray technology, and then they said, okay, now we need to start blurring out parts because we're seeing a little too much here. But we were willing to do that. We stand in long lines now. We take our shoes off because one guy tried to light a bomb in his shoe. So all of us take our shoes off. Alright? But we were willing, in America, if you will promise us that we will be secure, we will allow you to invade our privacy. So Israel, you know, it's part of the human temperament. I just find that fascinating. And so for Israel to say, you know, we want peace and we're willing to make a treaty with someone for 7 years who promises to give us peace, and he delivers at the beginning of that, I get it. We see it played out. So I'm not saying that's it. I'm just saying there's an illustration. There's an illustration. All right, so we were here someplace. What verse were we on?
Is it
15? 15?
No,
we're a little farther, weren't we?
21?
How many vote for 21? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So 20. He was horns on his head. Three of them fell. Yeah. Okay. So 21. And I kept looking. That horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. 22. The Ancient of Days is going to eliminate the Antichrist. 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. Now Rome did conquer a lot of territory, but it did not conquer the whole earth. Remember, this is the Antichrist. It says here that he sets up a kingdom that conquers the whole earth. We remember that Jesus comes and sets up a kingdom in the millennial period that conquers the whole earth. So this is Antichrist in a very literal sense, in that he is able to set up a one world government.
And he's going to have a lot of power over Christians, right?
He will have a lot of power over saints. I wouldn't use the word Christian because, I mean, I get what you're saying, because Christians have gone, okay? But he will. He's going to put to death. There's going to be martyrs. And next week when we look at 144,000, you know, because the only ones going into the tribulation period are unsaved people. So there needs to be a way for them to get a witness. And so we got two witnesses, 144,000, that whole thing, in which there are many of the Jewish nation that will come to Christ, many of them will be martyred. Because if you're not following Antichrist, you've got a choice. Kind of like, really, it takes us all the way back to Babylon. You know, you worship the statue, or we're going to throw you in the fiery furnace. Okay, so fourth beast, there's something different. There's something absolutely different. And we know that if this is the Antichrist, which I am suggesting to you that it is, then he is certainly different than any other world ruler that has ever existed. So verse 25, and he will speak out against the Most High, God, and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in time and in law. And that's kind of interesting. That's kind of cryptic, and I don't know specifically what that means. Some have suggested, you know, that he's trying to go from, you know, 7 days a week to 8 or 9. I don't know. I don't know exactly what that means, but he has the power and ability to change laws and also do some other things. Alterations in time and law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and half a time. All right, so if this is 7 years, half of seven is
3.5.
So a time would be 1 year, half a time is half a year. Now, it doesn't say 2 years, it says time, so it's plural, it's more than one. So that allows us to get 3.5 years, which other places actually do say that. So when Daniel has this prophecy of time, times, and half a time, we're dealing with what the Antichrist does He's given this power at the midsection of the tribulation period.
When is the mark?
We're getting there. Good question. Let's see. Court will sit for judgment. Sovereignty, 27, the sovereignty and dominion, greatness of all the kingdoms under the heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be everlasting. So ultimately, even though we see this happening with the Antichrist, ultimately, if you miss everything else tonight, Jesus wins. Jesus is going to set up his kingdom. He's going to set up his rule. And he certainly will do it during the millennial period, rule and righteousness. But ultimately, Jesus sets up a kingdom of which, if we're followers of Jesus, we get to be part of that. That's still future. Okay? So this is an everlasting kingdom and dominion. And then notice last part of verse 27, and we get to serve and obey him. We will serve. You know, you're not going to be called to sit on some cloud and play a harp forever and ever and ever. That sounds a little boring. After the first 1,000 years, what do? Change the tune? I mean, you know. So this is a kingdom that we get to serve, that there's actually going to be set up. And then you see in verse 28, my thoughts were greatly alarming me and my face grew pale, but I kept this matter to myself. Jump over to Daniel 9. I'm going to have to compress this a little bit because we are running a little. Well, we might move some of this into next week, you know? If that's okay with y'all.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to just blast through it and say, okay, yeah, but well, we missed this, but I mean. So I want to make it a meaningful time. So, you know, I don't know. Somewhere. We lost it in the footnote someplace. Let me see. Pick up. Verse 20. Daniel chapter 9, verse 20. Well, no, that was the prayer verse 20 was the prayer. Remember, Daniel's praying. There's an answer that Gabriel comes to answer. Let's pick it up in verse 23. Okay? Daniel chapter 9, verse 23. At the beginning of your supplications, when you began to pray, and you read about that, remember the first half of Daniel 9, is this prayer. At the beginning of your supplications, a command was issued, and I've come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed. So give heed to the message and gain understanding of the vision. So I've come to Daniel, you've asked what's coming. And you understood that you've got 3 years before the 70 years is up. And so I've come to give you 70 weeks has been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end of sin, to make atonement for iniquity, bring in the everlasting righteousness, seal up the vision, etc. Verse 25, so you are to know and discern that from the issuing of the decree to restore the building of Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, there will be 7 weeks and 62. And that's where we got the top line that's on your chart. There are four different decrees that were issued to begin rebuilding. The best one that had the greatest implication or application began in 445. So then there were seven, and then the wall was kind of built, etc. Then there was another 62 until we saw Messiah the Prince and all those events, the coming of Jesus into this world. And so we have 69 weeks. We're still missing that one, which is the tribulation period. All right, it's that 70th week. Verse 26. And after the 62 weeks, Messiah will be cut off. That's Jesus dies. Have nothing to the people. Prince who's to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary, and it will come within a flood. Even so, the end there will be wars, desolations are determined. And he will make a firm covenant. So we have now switched over 26. There's a possibility that when Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 AD, there was a partial fulfillment of that in verse 26. But it didn't affect everything. And so in 26 and 27 then becomes a reference to the future Antichrist. Because notice, it says in verse 27, and he, it takes us back to Daniel 7:8, he will make a firm covenant with many for 1 week, but in the middle of the week he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings, which will be once again instituted in Israel. And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even one until a complete destruction, one that is decreed, is poured out on the one who makes desolate. So Antichrist is coming. That's another looking ahead. Now jump over to Daniel chapter 11. Daniel chapter 11. And this is one of the most fulfilled prophecies, if we can put that terminology in there. Pick it up in verse 36. Verse 21 down through verse 35 refers to Antiochus Epiphanes. He was like 165 BC to, or 175 to about 65. He desecrated the altar and put a pig on it and all of those kinds of things. Antiochus Epiphanes means magnificent. So he stuck that on, I'm Antiochus the Magnificent. And so he is kind of a partial fulfillment of what ultimately Antichrist will be. Okay? So then we pick up Antichrist in verse 36. 21 through 35 is Antiochus Epiphanes, a prefigurement, and then in verse 36 is Antichrist. Then the king will do as he pleases. He will exalt and magnify himself above every god, will speak monstrous things against God, the God of gods, and he will prosper until the indignation is finished, for what is decreed will be done. Verse 37, and he will show no regard for the gods of his fathers. There's that passage that seems to indicate that there's a possibility he could be Jewish, since that would be the gods of his father. But again, I'm not going to push that super hard. Nor the desire of women. He's not going to be compassionate. We don't really know what to do with some of those cryptic statements. Nor will he show regard for any other god. So he is going to be worshipped. No other god. Again, he takes us back to Babylon, right? You're going to worship me. But instead, he will honor a god of fortress and a god of his whose fathers did not know. What's a god of fortress? What do you think that means? Military might. Here's an individual who honors military might. He's going to have a god that his fathers didn't know. It's going to be himself. He will honor him with gold, silver, costly stones. He will take action against the strongest of the fortresses with the help of foreign god. He will give great honor to those who acknowledge him. He will cause them to rule over the many, and he will parcel out the land for a price. So he has global rule and reign. 40, at the end of the time, the king of the south will collide with him, and the king of the north will storm against him with chariots, with horsemen, and with many ships, and he will enter countries, overflow them, and pass through. Who those are? King of the south, Egypt, Ish. We don't know what to do with king of the north. That's often been understood to be Russia. They're in a bit of a predicament at this point in time. Is there enough time between now and that to, you know, kind of regroup? Or is this somebody else? Some have suggested even that this refers to Antichrist himself with territories that he has already conquered. Verse 41. He will also enter the beautiful land. What's the beautiful land? Is Palestine. Promised land. And many countries will fall, but these will be rescued out of his hand, Edom, Moab, and for the most part. He will stretch out his hand against other countries, but he will gain control over the hidden treasures of gold, silver, and precious things of Egypt, Libya, perhaps the ones that come from the south. Rumors from the east and from the north will disturb him. He will go forth with great wrath to destroy and annihilate them. So even though it might be just, you know, a rumor from the north, he's going to destroy them. Verse 45, he'll pitch his tents of royal pavilion between the seas, the beautiful holy mountain, yet he will come to his end and no one's going to be able to help him. So at the end of the time, Antichrist will be dealt with. All right? We'll stop there. Because it takes us next into Revelation 13 that then links us to Antichrist and what empowers Antichrist. That the dragon empowers the beast. Okay? If you want to read ahead, read 13, chapter Revelation 13. All right, so I hope I didn't leave you too much in the dark. Do you have, you know, somewhere back there, do you have some questions that I can attempt? The main things I want you, really want you to take, number one, as you take away, God sits on His throne and Jesus will rule and reign. Okay, if you forget everything else, that's all. Antichrist is coming. And there are events that are going to be horrendous on this earth. He is going to be a global ruler. And he will have himself as set up as God. And he will have the false prophet, who we read about in Revelation 13, will be set up to help individuals worship him. There's also something pretty ironic that happens, but that's in Revelation 13. We'll save that piece for next time. Do you have questions that I can attempt to answer at this point? I know we covered a lot.
You mentioned 1 John, and there's
I think it's 1 John 2, 4. Second Peter, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, John 2. It's not 2, 4. Maybe do a quick Google search. John, because he speaks of the Antichrist, which is a reference. I was trying to see if I had that. Pardon?
2:18.
Yeah. Thanks. I had two, but I was looking at the wrong place. Yeah. 1 John 2:18. Children, it's the last hour, and just as you heard, Antichrist is coming, and even now many Antichrists have arisen. From this we know that is the last hour. So we are living in this last hour, the imminency of Christ. Jesus could come back at any time, but the spirit of the Antichrist is one that rejects everything that God has to say. Humanists, I'm good, I don't need Jesus. And that has been going on since John wrote this book around 90 AD. So that the spirit is there, but this is an actual person. So making that differentiation, if I might. Questions? Good question.
Where is the Islamic people? Because they're all over the place. During this time,
they will have to fall in line with the Antichrist. They'll have to submit themselves.
Because I heard somewhere and I never read it, but their book of prophecy is almost like Revelation in reverse, where the good guys are the bad guys, and the bad guys are, I've never read it.
Yeah, Quran and whatnot. So, what I want to go next week is we'll pick up Revelation 13 that kind of expands this just a little bit, gives us a little bit behind the driving force behind Antichrist, and also what he suffers a fatal wound, what happens there, and then also look at the 144,000 that become, I call them, the Jewish Missionary Society, because remember, all those who leave are followers of Jesus. There's not a... Other than maybe Bibles and tracts and other written material, maybe websites and podcasts and those kinds of things, that's the only witness there's going to be for Christ, because people are going to be gone. Followers of Jesus are going to be gone. So, there needs to be a way, because God uses people to tell other people about Jesus. So those other tools are great, but God's going to send some witnesses to make that happen. All right. I don't know if you're too much. Did I leave you too much in a fog? Sorry. Apologies.